Hi, this is Farah Osbeck. Welcome back to Military Law and Life Matters, the podcast that arms you with knowledge so you don't become a victim of injustice. So welcome back to another week of our podcast. And as you know, I've been doing a series, not sure how many of these I'm going to do, but I'm going over cases that I'm finding on the boards of review reading rooms. And I put that link on these podcast show notes so you can go on there and check out these cases as well. But the reason I'm doing this is, you know, if you're trying to or thinking about doing your own application, I'm hoping as I discuss these, you know, random cases, I'm really not going in order, but trying to pick cases that are a little bit different from each other, from each service. I'm hoping by the time you're done listening to all these, the series I'm doing, it's going to really through osmosis, you're going to get the idea of what's a viable package. Viable meaning what at least is going to give the boards an opportunity to consider your case, where they don't say, well, the member didn't provide any contention of the discharge being inequitable or improper. So you don't want that answer. You don't want the board to say, you know, the applicant didn't even give us a reason, right? You don't want that. So I'm trying to go over the types of things that you will actually need to state in your application. Obviously, you know, the truth of whatever happened, but you need to bring this to the board's attention. So through osmosis, through me discussing these concepts over and over, I think you're going to get a pretty good idea of how to do these cases. And, you know, you might be a veteran or actually, you know, there are lawyers who do this. Maybe there's some lawyers listening. So I hope you learn something so you can help veterans in your practice as well to upgrade their discharges, because it's not something that most lawyers really work on, even military lawyers, because unless you happen to specifically do this type of work, it's not a typical part of military law practice. I happen to just know it because that was one of my jobs. I was assigned to the personnel council, and the discharge review board was one part of it. It wasn't my whole job whatsoever. We did tons of different types of cases, but it was one aspect that I really did enjoy. So here I'm going to talk about an Air Force case again. We're back to the Air Force, and we have this airman. The airman applicant was discharged in 2018. And he basically, you know, I'm just saying he, because sometimes it's not obvious what the sex of the person is. So just, you know, I'm just going to use a general he. So this person was discharged for drug abuse. The write-up does not actually say what the drug was. I'm assuming it was marijuana. Okay, THC, as they write in the charge sheet or the Article 15, you know, THC is tetrahydrocannabinol. And the reason I say it was probably marijuana is because if the person got a general discharge under honorable conditions, and I doubt he would have gotten that with marijuana, with cocaine or some other drug. Usually they might even, it could be a court martial or other than honorable discharge. If you're an airman, even maybe an NCO, et cetera, for marijuana, if that's the only offense, it's generally, obviously if there's no distribution, things like that, it's generally a general discharge under honorable conditions, at least for the Air Force. Actually, all the services are different, but the Air Force, that's generally what it is from my experience. So what this applicant wanted to do was he wanted, now his DD-214 says, you know, drug abuse on it. It doesn't say marijuana. So anyone who sees that DD-214, they're going to see drug abuse. And drug abuse, you know, does not, someone reading that who doesn't know, who's not in the military, is not going to know that's like, oh, one time this kid went to a party and smoked marijuana. That's not what they're going to think. They're going to be like, oh, this person is a drug abuser. And they're not, yeah, just the language is a little bit harsh, honestly. So I don't know how this person even used the marijuana. It doesn't discuss that, what it is or how they used it. But I'm just telling you, when a civilian looks at that DD-214, drug abuse does not sound very good. It's a lot different if you explain to someone, you know, I'm applying for this job, but just so you know, my DD-214 says drug abuse, but I went to a party, was intoxicated, tried marijuana, was depressed. That comes off a lot different than drug abuse, the facts and circumstances. So he got a general under honorable conditions. It says drug abuse, and he got an RE code. I don't know the number, but it was something that doesn't allow you to reenlist. It's not a one. This was a document review. He did not go in person. I'll break it to you. His application was denied, so he actually can now request a personal appearance if it's under if it's less than 15 years ago, which it is because he was discharged in 2018. excuse me. So, you know, the Air Force and all the services have this like typical language. They say, you know, it's our responsibility, you know, it's your responsibility to look, to present evidence, to rebut this presumption of regularity, because we just assume everything happened as it should have been in the Air Force. And that's like typical language they have in there. So it says that the applicant, this airman, he got an Article 15, he accepted for the drug abuse. Again, I think it's marijuana. And then it says the applicant made no contentions that the discharge was inequitable or improper. So basically, this is another case of, okay, they just said, in his case, he said he wants to reenlist. Like, that's really the purpose of this kid's wanting to, I think, why he did this application. He wants to reenlist, which a lot of people do. He wants his RE code changed. He said he struggled with substance abuse while in the Air Force. His problems started in high school. So I'm curious what he had as an enlistment paperwork. If he had, you know, noted that. That's why I look at, when I get people's records, I look at their enlistment documents, because if they got a 15 for marijuana use and then to their commander they said, this is the first time I've ever used this in my life, I'm really sorry, they can look at, you know, the enlistment records, and the enlistment records he might have said, because they waive that, I used marijuana twice in high school. So that doesn't work out well. That's why you have to look at all your records, and hopefully you're consistent, because then if you don't tell the truth, it really does not work out well. Basically, if you lie, that's why you really need all the records and refresh your memory of what you said, what you did. So he really, you know, he wants it changed to an honorable discharge. He wants the drug abuse changed to a secretarial authority, which I totally understand. Any case I do for clients, when it has any type of negative connotation, which it will, misconduct, drug abuse, I always ask that it be changed to what's called secretarial authority. It's just generic language. It's like, I was discharged, you know, the Secretary of the Air Force has authority to do that. It doesn't like connote any type of negative type of thing. It's just secretarial authority. So that's what I always ask it to be changed, because I say, like, don't brand my client with a drug abuse thing on his D-214. He's only 20. He's got another like 70 years at least to go. You know, please like change that. So that's what I would ask for that to be changed to. And in this case, a lot of clients don't care about the RE code necessarily if they're not going to reenlist. He wants to. This kid wants to reenlist. And he wants his RE code change. So in this case, the board said, you know, you really didn't tell us anything, you know, that you didn't make a contention saying it was inequitable, it was improper. You just said, well, I had problems in high school and I was discharged. So they didn't have a basis to change it. And this is a difficult case. There maybe is no basis to change it based on his circumstances. The times these can be changed, or at least there's an opportunity to be changed with the drug abuse cases, is if, you know, that CURTA memo. So look at my website, other podcasts, I talk about this, but the CURTA memo, which came out in 2017, and then the Wilkie memo in 2018, and even the Hagel memo, 2014. These memos basically are from the Department of Defense telling the services, hey, look at these cases, and if there is the PTSD or any mental health disorder or behavioral health issue, and if it's linked to the misconduct, you know, please use liberal consideration in determining whether you should upgrade someone's discharge. That gives an out. Like, as a matter of fact, you know, when those memos came out, there's probably the services had a surge in applications, because now you have all these people who maybe had no chance of upgrading their discharge before. They now have this liberal guidance thing, which I've used for a lot of my clients. I mean, I'd say at least 30% of my clients have, we've used the liberal guidance, memo guidance, because they were, you know, veterans of Iraq or Afghanistan, had PTSD, other mental health issues, and there was a very clear nexus between their misconduct, usually drug abuse, actually, like marijuana, sometimes cocaine. So there's, you very clearly in the cases I've handled, because I only take cases where I believe there's a reasonable chance of success, you've seen that spiral down where the guy was great, whether it was an officer enlisted, doing great, then deployed, and his life went to hell. I mean, just marital problem, everything happened. They started abusing alcohol, you know, marital problems, divorce, PTSD, just everything. It just went downhill. And you can just see it very clearly from the records that this happened. So, you know, these liberal guidance memos, the Curta memo, et cetera, gives a basis. This guy didn't have that. At least he didn't allege it. It doesn't seem like there was. And he said, please, you know, change my reenlistment code where they're not, you know, they're not going. First of all, I discussed with you, I think last time, they're not going to just change the RE code because you want to reenlist. They will only change the DRB if there's a basis based on an error or injustice in your discharge. So that's, I mean, I guess the point here again is if you're going to submit an application, the teaching point in this case is you got to give them a contention. Like, why is this unjust? Why is this illegal, improper, or unfair? You got to give them a reason. And sometimes there just isn't. Like, there may not be a reason. In this case, maybe there wasn't. Reasons could be, again, mental health issues, etc., which the DOD acknowledges the self-medication aspect. So I hope this was helpful for you to understand. Again, and it's not just PTSD. I usually don't repeat the whole thing, but remember in these memos, it says PTSD, TBI, right? Traumatic brain injury. If you were a victim of military sexual trauma or military sexual like assault, or also a victim of sexual harassment. So you don't have to have even been deployed. Let's say you were in a duty station and you were like sexually harassed for like a year by your supervisor and had mental health problem. And then you were going to mental health, you know, the military behavioral health office. I don't know what they call it. They change that all the time. So you go there and there's documentation of you talking to the psychologist or the counselor about your boss being a pain in the neck and like sexually harassing you and this and that. That's, wow, that's like a pretty good case of, and then you used marijuana to self-medicate. So there are cases where it's not always, you know, we talk about all the deployments, but I actually had a client, her discharge was upgraded. She was clearly sexually harassed, actually several times. Once deployed, and there was witnesses. We got witness statements of things that people did, like, and then sexually assault, like people grabbing her body. So yeah, these things do happen, unfortunately. But yeah, so I hope this, you know, this is a good example for you to show you that, like, sometimes there is not even a basis. I mean, you could definitely try, but you have to give them some reason, not just, I want to reenlist. So that is this case of the airman. Unfortunately, I hope he's doing well now. Don't know what he would be doing. But I mean, I'd really sympathize for the poor airmen who have DD-214s that say drug abuse on it. It's just really harsh. I mean, it's harsh for them to have to live with that for the next, and show it to every employer. Because if you never served, like people who don't serve, so many people use marijuana these days, young kids at least. And they never like enlisted, but these kids who enlist, then they like use marijuana. Again, it's illegal. So I'm not like condoning, you're not supposed to do illegal things, right? When you're in the military, you know that's gonna get you discharged. But the harshness of it for this 18-year-old kid enlisted, you know, has some problems, goes to a party, drinks, right? Everyone drinks. And then you're, you know, you're not really thinking clearly. And then someone says, hey, here's a marijuana. And then you use it, boom, you're discharged. It's mandatory. Like in the military, if you use drugs, it's a mandatory discharge, including a prescription drug that you did not have a prescription for. I've had many cases where one of, you know, the drug was like Adderall. Like people sometimes, and that's something even adults have prescriptions for, but there are people who have been discharged for using a prescription drug that they didn't have a prescription for. So going back to, I guess I'm very sympathetic to these kids who then have this thing that, I mean, literally brands you like right on your forehead, so that if you go for a job, especially government or non-government, they ask you, have you served the military? Yeah, let's see your DD-214. Oh, drug abuse. So I would recommend if you're in that case, like just be honest with the people, like say, show them the paperwork. I mean, while you're trying to maybe change this, I mean, if you can show them it was marijuana, it was one time, that's a lot different than you just like, don't be afraid to tell them the circumstances. Show them the Article 15, like, because I think an employer is going to be a lot more sympathetic if they see it was marijuana and the circumstances, you know, you used it. But if you just throw up your hands and say, oh, I didn't get the job, you know, they saw my DD-214, you know, there's a chance, like, don't give up, because, you know, maybe that employer, he's got kids and their kids use marijuana. I mean, they're going to be understanding. Of course, it depends on the job, et cetera. So I guess that's enough about that case. So let me discuss a little thing about my military law and life matter that I read. I mean, I've heard this before. It's kind of a little bit trite, but I think it can give you a little bit of insight. You know, I'm really obsessed. You could tell by now I'm obsessed with people doing things that are really passionate about, or they really enjoy. That's an obsession for me, to spread the word, not to, you know, get a job. This 9-to-5, you go and it's like hell all day, and you come home and then you go to the bar and start drinking because your life is hell. Try to find something you like. I mean, not everyone's going to find their passion. That's like, oh my God, I'll do this for free, I'll pay. But try to find something you like. How do you know your passion, by the way? I think I, you know, discussed different heuristics, but here's one. So this is like something, okay. It's like, so how do you find your passion? Well, what would you do if you had 6 months to live? Or another one I would like to add that. What would you do if you had $1 billion, like extreme amount of money? Even a million is not a lot these days. It's a lot, but let's just use billion. If you have $1 billion or had 6 months to live, what would you do? Now, I'm not saying like, oh, I have 6 months to live, so I'm going to go travel around the world because I want to see every place. You can't use something like, well, I'm going to go just visit every relative because I have 6 months to live. What would you do if they say, okay, you got 6 months to live, or you got $1 billion, and you have to pick some project to work on for the next 6 months, some little passion project, something you want to do. Okay. So you don't have those options of just traveling or visiting every relative, but you have to work on some project. What do you think you'd want to do for 6 months? That might, again, give you some insight. So anyway, I hope that was helpful for you. As always, I really do enjoy talking to you, sharing a little bit of my wisdom. Life matters. You know, you got your discharge, but you also have to get your life in order. And there's so many things to do that. I mean, just don't settle and don't give up is what I would say. You know, don't ever give up, because especially if you were just discharged and you're young, you got another like 60, 70 years ahead of you. You got a long time ahead of you. And don't give up. I mean, people would give $1 billion to be 18, 20 again. I'm assuming you're that age, or even 20, even 30. Like, people would pay. You can't buy time, right? You can make money, but you can't buy time. So don't give up. You know, think of ways to make your life better and step in the right direction. Keep going forward, basically. So anyway, hope that was helpful. As I always say, never, ever give up, because there is always hope. Talk to you next time.